Yo, Brendan.
Hello, fellow.
Every week I do have to tune in just to hear these again and again. The Not a Thing podcast, 128. We're getting into kind of fun numbers. That's a power of two for those that like that kind of math.
I don't like that kind of math. It's not a
Well,
thing.
I know what kind of math you like. It sounds like you went to get some more Pliny this week.
Yes, I like the math of 30-minute wait, and then I get beer.
It's certainly a lot less than we waited the prior week for Pliny, which was, let's just remind everyone, was 6 hours.
Yeah.
For three beers, let's be fair, three beers. But I think 30 minutes to beer is a little more reasonable considering, that's about as long as it takes to get, food at some places. So it probably worked out a little better.
Yeah. But it didn't taste as good. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't magic. Like
Huh.
when we stood in line for 6 hours.
I'm wondering if there is some amount of like the shared struggle makes it taste better, which is I'm a little bummed if that's the case, because I don't know if I want to go through that much struggle to taste that beer again.
I mean, it was still one of the best beers I've ever had. But I did notice it. I don't know. It wasn't quite the same.
Well, I mean, it could be some variance
I'm not going through that again.
about You're not going to wait another 6 hours to back-to-back taste
Hell
test
no.
that. I think 30 minutes is a good amount of time. I'm wondering, do you think there's a sweet spot between 30 minutes and 6 hours, or do you think it might have just been because it was from a different place or something else
I mean, it
about
was
the
a
venue?
fresher. I don't know if it's a fresher keg. It's probably the same. But it was later. And it had been only, what, a week since I last had it versus a year. So maybe it wasn't quite as different of a flavor.
Interesting. Your palate has already adjusted to
Yeah. I mean, it still has made all other beers lesser when I've been drinking them.
That is impressive. It is a very good beer. Pliny the Younger, definitely a thing. I'm not sure what we have to do to get an allocation for the podcast, but hopefully.
And I'm not saying where I got it or where I'm going to get it again.
Very
I'm
fair,
not a
very
dummy.
fair. Cool. Well, let's move from people not talking about things to people talking about things that previously they weren't talking about. Wow, that got really vague all of a sudden. It's all misdirection because it's about our friends at the NSA. Hi, the NSA.
Yeah, and by our friends, we don't mean actual friends. We are not some secret arm of the NSA.
least so far, as far as we know, our podcast is not a vector for the Equation Group, which is a group that was identified by Kaspersky Labs. You may have heard of Kaspersky for their line of antivirus software, anti-malware software. It's actually I believe it's a Russian-based hacking group or security group, rather. I mean, hacking is such a weird term, but they've identified a number of patterns and a number of different things about kind of data and intrusion issues out in the world, and have released a paper pointing out a bunch of connections that they're dubbing the Equation Group, which seems to be a group of hackers that have infected a number of different systems in very novel and really well thought out ways in order to stay hidden. But given vast amount of data and resources that they were able to pull together and use, it kind of exposed themselves through this. And so Kaspersky Labs wrote a big paper about it. It's on, I think it's on Ars Technica. It got picked up by a few different things. Initially, when I'd heard about it, it was regarding firmware on hard drives being identified as rewritten and containing malware payloads. And what was interesting was it wasn't just like one brand of hard drives. It was like a bunch of them. And there's a lot of speculation whether hard drive companies were complicit in making this happen only because it was so widespread about all different models of hard drives, or if the hard drives were in fact reverse engineered to the point where those hacks could be inserted. But in any case, the conclusion seems to be that this was a spying program, and they deduced through the large number of targets that are in Iran and other countries that are known to be kind of spy targets of the United States, that it is an NSA-led effort to spy on computers kind of globally. It's a really fascinating and big article, and the impressive and just frankly scary part is how widespread and how big it is. It's almost assuredly kind of state sponsored in order to have that much reach and that much resources. So I think the NSA has officially declined to state whether they're related or not, but there's a lot of fingers being pointed and there's a lot of noise being made. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a further kind of escalation of information about it. Interestingly enough, the first article I read was on Reddit on, I want to say it was Saturday. It might have been Friday night or Saturday. And Sunday morning, I noticed that the entirety of the, I think it was the news subreddit, was that story. And in looking at it a little more, I guess some moderators had shuffled one of those articles, and then the rest of the folks in /r/news decided to, you know, kind of upvote all of the stories related to it in order to kind of rebel against the mods. So I'm not saying, you know, get out your tinfoil hat and the mods of Reddit are complicit, but it's a little shady about how all this is going on. In fact,
also a tinfoil hat would not help you in this situation.
It's surprising how little that does help, actually. Although it does help us kind of identify the people that are in that way. But it's really fascinating. One of the things that they identified was a USB stick based malware in order to bridge what they call the air gapped systems. So these are systems that are not connected to the internet at large. They might be small internal networks that are deliberately separated from the rest of the internet. And the USB stick vector is used to infect those and map them. And then, because if you're transferring files between one network to another, you have to do it via some method, and using a USB stick seems to be the easiest way. And apparently there were USB stick malwares made specifically to bridge those things. It's kind of fascinating. I think it's one of those where, you know, there's a lot of information about that and there'll be a lot of noise about it. I think you have to find good sources that'll give you the facts and not the noise for this one. So I'm kind of leaning on Ars Technica a little bit and the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Usually those are good bets for that kind of thing. But we'll see how that one goes.
So really the message is fear everything, unplug it all, go hide in the hills. But make sure you keep an internet connection so you can keep downloading the podcast.
Yes, the Not A Thing podcast. Malware free since actually I don't know, we've never checked. We make no guarantees. It's a free podcast.
You get what you pay for.
Well, in a case of hopefully someone will get what they pay for, is some news out of Carnegie Mellon University, CMU, this week. I think they're one of the more prestigious colleges for a bunch of things, and specifically their computer science program is really kind of well-known and big, and they sent a letter to the accepted students and mentioned that there's, you know, they only accepted 9% of like 1,200 applicants, so that's like 100 something people, and they talked about how great it's going to be and how great CMU and computer science is going to be by accepting all these folks. The problem is that they sent that acceptance letter to 800 people, 800 plus people that were actually not accepted. And so some kind of ostensibly computer glitch caused that. And they had to send retraction letters to all of those folks. And I can link them. It's pretty awful, I think. I don't know. Like how people, you know, were about or are about college now. I remember when I was choosing colleges, it was kind of a big deal for some people, for a small percentage of people who were like they needed to get into this school or feel like they were in this school. And when they did or when they didn't, it was like a big kind of big deal for them to kind of measure themselves and their progress so far and stuff. I can completely see people being, you know, really, really messed up over this.
And it took 7 hours for them to send the retractions.
Yeah. It's, I can't even imagine what that must have been like. But at the same time, it's, you gotta be a little concerned, right? I mean, it's CMU, well known for computer science. Probably looks like a computer glitch. That's, I feel like someone's going to get fired over this.
Oh, someone's definitely, this has to be some sort of human error. Like they clicked one group too many.
Yeah, that's, it's really messed up. It's really one of those things where if your heart was writing on this, hopefully it was within an amount of time that you didn't like reject like all of the other schools you were getting into or anything like that. I mean, it was 7 hours, but at least it was, you know, in the same day, hopefully. So hopefully not too many actions were taken outside of what people would expect.
Well, I would expect there to be quite a few actions probably in the next few months. They just pissed off 800 people who have a reasonable amount of computer skills, I would assume, if you're looking for a master's of science program at a computer in computer science, they're going to get DDoSed at a minimum. that'll be fun. Let's wait for that. That's my prediction of the year. There's going to be another news story about Carnegie Mellon getting screwed over by some sort of attack.
Yeah. It's that's really a shame more than anything else. I mean, I think, I don't know, for me, for college, I guess, I don't know. I didn't go for a graduate program, so I'm not sure if I would feel the same way about it. I do know that when I had applied to colleges and universities, it was not so, I didn't feel like it was that much of a referendum on my self-worth or anything. I know a bunch of people that really, really, really did, and they were like heartbroken when they didn't get into Stanford or wherever they didn't get into. I mean, it was almost a laugh for me. Like, you know, did you get your rejection letter from Stanford? It's like, I did. Yeah. All right. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know if it's a, I hope it's not a confidence level thing. I really hope that, you know, people have enough self-worth that they can, you know, pull it through. It's college. It's okay. It's not quite the real world yet. You have a little bit of time.
You've got a lot of time and perspective on that.
That's true, too. Not that much time.
Well, I mean, I remember when I applied to college, I applied to one school, and they accepted me before the other applications were due.
Okay.
So I took it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, early acceptance? I don't need to apply anywhere else. I got in. I'm done. May have been a mistake, seeing as I didn't finish there. But at the time, totally good idea.
No, and it really is a perspective thing. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, a little bit of time on it, and then you're like, what could I really be doing with this time? Is it really, is the expectation ever, or is the is it worth the reality? Is the hype ever worth, you know, the movie that comes out? Sometimes, maybe.
Sometimes,
maybe. But I think it's not a guarantee. So, you know, I used to say all learning is a con. It's all just there to expand your mind for whatever actually comes. So hopefully those folks that quote-unquote didn't get into CMU get something. Maybe it's a positive thing. Hopefully it's not just a DDoS attack at CMU later this week.
Although if it proves me right, I'm all for it.
Well, from computer errors to computer successes, this is an interesting story about someone that did an analysis of Where's Waldo? I sincerely hope this was not tax dollar funded, but someone put together an algorithm using machine learning to figure out where Waldo is, or rather the best search pattern based on to find Waldo. And the way it did it was it used a map of all of the different places where Waldo was in all of the books. So someone had to actually find Waldo in all of these books, and then it would map all of those points out, and then it used what I believe is called the traveling salesman algorithm, which I kind of remember from computer science. And that's the one where you have a number of places to visit and you're trying to do it in the shortest route possible. And so you have a algorithm which will try a bunch of different combinations. So it ideally does not like loop back onto itself or waste any routes. And it creates a search path for looking at a page to find Waldo in the fastest route possible. And it's funny because I think the sample size is only like, I feel like it's only like 100 or not even that many different puzzles. So when you make an algorithm that's supposed to find Waldo in 100 puzzles, you can almost just program all the places for Waldo to be and then go, yeah, there he is. He's in one of these.
There's only 68.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was not that many. So I feel like, and then testing it against existing books is not a fair test. I mean, yes, it is an algorithm and can do it, but that's based on those 68 books. I mean, if, you know, or
which
those 68
books. With 68, you could just memorize that.
Yeah, right. Not that I think I'd want to. There were some algorithmic things that they talked about that weren't machine algorithms, just because that's what happens when you turn a page algorithms. Like if you turn a page, you're turning it with, if you're right-handed, you're turning it with your right hand. And so the first thing you see, because that's the bottom right corner of the next page. And so it's less likely that they would put Waldo there because it's the first place you'd look. And I feel like that kind of thing is a more useful general guideline than this very specific path that they have your eyes supposedly take.
I always felt like using a Where's Waldo book to actually find Waldo was the most boring use of the book. I always enjoyed looking at all the different little scenes that they fit into this large tapestry of.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I mean, as a fan of Al Jaffe and like the old Mad Magazine stuff where there'd be like the little drawings in the corner, that's exactly what it reminded me of for Where's Waldo. There were just all sorts of funny little jokes all over the page, many of which were not really appropriate for when I was handed Where's Waldo books. I feel like I was maybe, like under 12 when these books were kind of put in front of me to find Waldo, keep me busy, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm not supposed to be able to see the things I'm seeing right now. Certainly my younger sister and brother were not. I'm sure, we're all traumatized in some different way. Whatever, right? Found Waldo.
I think I'm probably going to end up, because of this article, buying a Where's Waldo book or two and keeping them at work.
And then drawing over them very quickly with your finger. The algorithms themselves are actually pretty cool. And if you happen to get into a computer science program, maybe not at Carnegie Mellon, some of those algorithms are really nice. I do remember algorithmic design being one of the more interesting things about computer science. I mean, if you could get past some of the language learning stuff, the just learning what the syntax is of the language, the actual algorithms themselves were actually pretty interesting and elegant the way those were made. I mean, machine learning is built on that kind of stuff, and that's really where we've always kind of been looking at about how things go and what's going to happen. I mean, that's where the machines are going to come from that will eventually overrun the Earth, hopefully not in our lifetime, but if the Marines have anything to do with that, it might be soon. There was an article that was forwarded our way by listener to the podcast, Kevin. We saw him when we went up to see the Nerdist in San Francisco as part of SF Sketchfest, and he sent us a link this evening about the Marines and their war balls. Balls.
This isn't a laughing matter, Alan. This is serious. We're looking at the
it
end of humanity.
so they're I
Stare at
guess
those balls in fear.
I guess they have balls that are these kind of rubberized motorized things with cameras on two sides, and it's gyroscopically stabilized, so it tries to stay upright. But it can roll around on land, it can traverse kind of distances, it can roll in the water and kind of swim at a slow speed. I think it's like 3 or 4 miles an hour. But then on land, it can go up to 20 miles an hour. I feel like we talked about this before when we talked about the DARPA like robot dog and things like that. When you make the robots faster than humans can travel, that's a really bad thing. It's
It's a terrible idea.
nothing good comes from that. If you make that like the baseline is that it travels twice as fast as humans, it's bad. It's like make it a little slower. Let us at least kind of get a head start on them when they do kind of rise up and
Oh yeah, and
become
they swim
mad at
4 miles
us.
an hour. They can swim. They're amphibious.
So currently it looks like they're being used, or they would be used for surveillance primarily. Honestly, I don't see any reason why these wouldn't be used offensively as well. There's all sorts of possibilities for making these things very, very dangerous. So
Well,
keep an
they said
eye.
that they were using them to test for chemicals and explosives for
Okay.
detection of that stuff, or reconnaissance with cameras, but also that they could be set up to carry explosives.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Oh, rolling bombs that chase you at 20 miles an hour. I just feel like that's not a thing It really shouldn't
see
be.
exhausted people running across the wasteland, being chased by these, being surveilled overhead by drones, waiting to be taken to their robot overlords. Judgment Day is coming.
It's Super Bomberman. That's what it is. It's a little maze and you're trying to run away from him and he explodes if he bumps into you. It's really bad.
I'm really excited for that new Terminator documentary. I hope there's some new techniques we can learn in there to help prevent Judgment Day.
Well, hopefully we get kind of a little bit of that. Again, maybe a computer science student who didn't go to CMU will program something really, really excellent for the safety of humanity rather than the extinction of it. But we'll see. Kind of moving from high-tech stuff to decidedly low-tech stuff. There's some interesting news out of Mexico, specifically around farming, but even more specifically around what crops are not being grown in Mexico. So apparently, the legalization of marijuana in a number of states in the United States has driven down the demand for marijuana from Mexico. And it's being replaced by a number of crops, most notably, at least so far, is heroin production has gone up. And there is some, I guess, there is some data supporting that heroin use is on the rise. I don't know if, I think there have to be a lot more numbers to come out before those start making sense. But it's an interesting article because it does talk about it from a semi-economic point of view, talking about supply and demand, and if the supply of marijuana is prevalent in the United States, then the demand for foreign marijuana is lower. So they have to diversify their crops in order to kind of increase demand of other products. And I think it's kind of a really like screwed up economy. It was really one line in the article was really telling. It was like, it doesn't make monetary sense to sell anything else in certain kind of regions in Mexico. And it's really messed up. So I think if the US is going to continue fighting the drug war, I think the reduction of foreign drugs into the United States is overall a positive thing. I think if you look at it strictly from a marijuana perspective, I think it is an interesting and telling fact about how how legalization will affect other countries. I think moving it in this direction may not be positive. At the same time, I don't. I would like to think there's not really a lot of people pushing for the legalization of heroin. I think the dangers of heroin are a little more bad. Hell of a
Heroin's
lot
bad.
worse. Hell of a lot worse. Just not a thing. I don't think well, I'd like to think that people are not using heroin recreationally to the extent that this article would seem to indicate.
Unless you're, like a musician or a comedian or whatever, because then it's cool. That's how we get this great art. These tortured geniuses shooting up.
Well, maybe.
No, whether you're getting high on marijuana or, I don't condone it, but if you're going to use heroin, buy locally sourced. As you should try to do with all items that you purchase.
Right.
It's for the environment, people.
Think globally, act locally.
Yeah.
That's actually really good advice. All joking aside, although, I think again, let's you know, maybe not doing heroin is a better idea than doing heroin from a foreign country. Maybe. Let's
But Alan, it's four, they're saying in this article it's $4 a hit. I mean, how can you pass up a deal like that?
it does seem ridiculously low. Like I'm
Is there
amazed
some
at that
sort of
number.
coincidence that oil prices are dropping and heroin prices are dropping? I don't know. Illuminati? I don't know.
Yeah, gas is under $4 a gallon. I mean, I could get 35 miles in my diesel tank, or I can get a hit of heroin. I feel like that's not a good trade-off still.
That's like buying a gallon of milk.
I'd rather drive 35 miles. It's more enjoyable to me, I think.
Well,
Hopefully.
they're saying that wholesale price $100 a kilogram 5 years ago. Now it's less than $25 a kilogram. Oil prices were over $100 a barrel, and I was just reading an article today that said they could drop to $10 to $20 a barrel
Wild.
if Saudi Arabia doesn't cut its production, which it doesn't look like they're doing, which is pretty great.
Yeah, I don't know if those are related, but it is an interesting correlation. That's a really cool thing to note. Maybe we can figure out how to use heroin as fuel, and then like prices of stuff would like kind
You know what doesn't cost a gallon for anything? It's solar power.
of
You know how much that is a gallon? $0.
Yeah, keep your solar hippie stuff to yourself.
I wonder what the cost of hydroelectrically produced electricity is, like per gallon.
Well, in a drought, probably less.
Oh, that's not funny.
Oh,
You're gonna be really thirsty.
really got to save water.
We're talking to you, Southern California.
Saving water, definitely a thing. Marijuana legalization, still a thing. Effects on the drug market at large. Interesting stuff to keep an eye out on. It's
What?
unintended consequences, possibly. I think you're right though. The eventual like dropping of the price does make it is interesting, not necessarily from a supply point of view, but really from a demand point of view. It's like, are people really demanding that much lower prices for that, or not willing to pay for something that might be, of higher quality or whatever? There's a lot more nuance to this than the article kind of belies. So again,
I almost kind of feel like at that price, it's almost like, how would you not try it? If you can get high-grade heroin for $4,
See, I don't think it would be
I could
high-grade
go to a
heroin.
movie for $4.
Well, let's not be hasty. Let's not.
I'm not saying I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's a thought.
Let's not spend our hashtag Flat Earth sponsorship money on any heroin this week, at least.
If we get any sponsorship money, the first $4 is going to heroin.
Oh, the Not a Thing podcast does not endorse the use of heroin.
No. But if you have $4, send it to Not a Thing Podcast, care of the DEA via the NSA.
Right. Feel free to alert any and all three-letter agencies on your way to us. Oh my gosh. Well, moving from
Yeah, I don't know where to go from there. All I'll
No.
say is from one addiction to another, there's gonna be a new Alien movie.
Yeah, I'm and not just the second Prometheus movie, which
It's still happening.
I think it's still happening, despite how kind of weird and I don't want to say just outright bad, but it was not a wonderful movie. The Prometheus movie, I think, did the Alien movies kind of a disservice in existing.
I would respectfully disagree. I will admit it on this podcast. I'm a Prometheus apologist.
No,
I like that movie.
I liked it. I think tying it to the Alien universe, in
Only
such a way,
enriches the universe.
I think
It gives it more depth and breadth.
I think some of the stylistic choices were a little much. I'm more, I actually, I would almost say that connecting the Alien universe to the Predator universe is cleaner, although none of those
Oh,
movies
I no
are good at
way.
all. None of those movies are good at all. I think from
If you
a
can stand Alien versus Predator and connecting those universes, then you can enjoy Prometheus. Those movies are terrible.
yeah, no, I enjoyed Prometheus. I just think as an Alien movie,
Well, it wasn't an Alien movie. It's like a parallel. Oh, that's a whole nother discussion. The big news. We don't
actual
have
alien
another.
movie. Actual
Yeah, there's going
alien
to be an
movie.
actual Alien movie directed by Neil Blomkamp of South Africa.
Of District 9 and Elysium and upcoming Chappie fame. All kind of interesting little kind of, well, maybe not Elysium. That wasn't small. It was they felt small, right? They were movies where you're focusing on just a very small number of characters in kind of a large setting. I mean, I guess even Elysium was focused on a small group. It loses its way a little bit, but I think he has a really great sense of style and how to use special effects and how to use or still highlight the kind of humanity in things, even things that aren't human. So I think it'll be a really interesting take on Alien because I think Alien does have a lot of good richness in the universe about it, even just based on the Alien movies. I think, again, and we're not going to get into it, it's not kind of going in the Prometheus direction of things. So I think there's still some kind of interesting play in how they could take it.
I think what excites me the most about it is that I was reading an article that said, or an interview with the director, that where he said that Alien was his favorite franchise, like his favorite movie, and this was before the movie was greenlit. Like he was saying, this is, his favorite movie growing up, and it's kind of the same situation with J.J. Abrams and Star Wars. Where it's a director getting to direct the thing that they always looked up to and have spent their whole lives thinking about, and that you can see bleeding over into the other things that they've done. Like, trying to bring elements of that into it. And now
It
they get to
has.
deal with the real deal.
It has a significant amount of potential. I mean, you're essentially giving a fan the reins to the machine at large, and that's really I think a big gamble on the studio's part. But at the same time, the Alien franchise really has a
An
lot of
uneven history.
yeah. It has a if it's going to stick around, it needs kind of another infusion of new and interesting. I think did you ever play Alien Isolation or know anyone that did?
No, I wanted to, but I did not.
Yeah, I know someone that ran through it and loved it, and it was just the right amount of creepy. I mean, I think for me it's difficult because I really liked both the original Alien movie and then Aliens, the second movie. Third one, not so much. And I
Nope.
actually didn't see I still have not seen Alien Resurrection.
You haven't seen Alien Resurrection?
Should I?
Yes,
Okay,
it's terrible, but in the best way.
I All right. Well, I can certainly do that. I mean,
Ne never skip out on an opportunity to see Ron Perlman chew up the scenery.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, I think Alien was an amazing horror film. Aliens was a really good action movie, and I think the universe kind of built on those two is great. I would like to see kind of more of where they go with it without being too metaphysical. I think the struggle between the humans and the aliens is enough. I do like that kind of in and of itself. So, I mean, that was my only thing with Prometheus is that they were getting a little, they or not a little, they were getting a little too, they were taking some of the universe building things a little too far. So,
Game over, man.
it's
Game over.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna have to pop Aliens back into the player and watch that one again. It's so good.
I bought the quadrilogy with Prometheus all on Blu-ray. They all came in a pack together.
Oh, very nice.
It's pretty great.
Okay.
All it has every cut of all the movies.
Oh my gosh. All right, we'll have to talk. We'll have to make something happen. I think that'll work. Cool, man. Well, I think that's a pretty good, easy spot to leave it this week. Not really spoiler territory. I mean, the movie is coming out, but we don't know anything about it other than it
Yeah.
exists.
Other than there's some concept art that was put out that looks pretty cool.
Oh, cool. Well, I love looking at concept art. So we'll see. We'll link that, and yeah, we'll just keep going. We're still recording episodes. We're still looking for guests. We had a guest 2 weeks ago. Hopefully, we can get a guest again soon. If you would like to be a guest on the show, tweet at us, Facebook us. I don't know if anyone still uses Google Plus. I mean, even Google seems to not be using Google Plus anymore. So that one may kind of go away in time. But find a way to get a hold of us, or maybe we'll find a way to get a hold of you and get you on the show. It'd be good. It'd be good. Brennan, I think I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.